While a court-appointed special master got national attention for the congressional boundaries he recently created for New York, here at the Capitol Press Room, we're obsessed with the state Senate boundaries that were created after the lines drawn by the Democratic majorities in the state legislature were invalidated because of how they were created. To discuss the finalized Senate lines, we're joined by Bill Mahoney, resident cartographer at the Capitol and a reporter for Politico New York. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the lines that will be used for the next decade, assuming there's no court intervention over the next 10 years, can you explain where the current lines that have been in place since 2012 come from? How were they drawn?
Well, the 2012 lines, like lines for pretty much every decade before that, were drawn by the Senate Republicans, at least the lines for the state Senate. Traditionally, the Senate was controlled by Republicans, while the Assembly was controlled by Democrats, and while they were drawing these two sets of maps, they would each draw their own house's lines and pass the lines that were most advantageous to their own parties. Now, 2012, we had a newish governor at the time, Andrew Cuomo, who had come into office promising he would veto any gerrymandered lines. He wound up realizing pretty quickly that that was not an option without going to complete war with the legislature, so he did everything he could to backtrack on this process and agreed to sign the lines that were drawn by the Senate Republicans with the caveat that they also passed this constitutional amendment to change the way redistricting was done in the future, which is what led to this whole process that collapsed spectacularly this decade and led to the courts picking up the process and drawing the maps themselves.
And there's a lot of ways for us to consider the new lines that we have. But let's start by, I guess, examining them from a perspective of incumbent on incumbent violence. Have a lot of incumbents, either of the same parties or opposite parties, been put in districts together?
It's not as bad as some of the other maps that we have seen, especially the one that was drawn by the court just a few days before their final map. And there are definitely some instances of multiple Democrats being placed in the same district, but I think they're all going to work this out in the end and avoid many major primaries between their own candidates. Most of them are kind of adjusting to run in a district near them.
Well, can you explain why that's allowed?
Well, in a redistricting year, you're allowed to run in any seat in the county that you currently live in. You don't need to actually live in the district. There's some flexibility on that front. So somebody who might say had their own district, they were drawn into the same district as some other incumbent, but they live a block away from the district that looks most like the district they've represented for the past 2 years, they can run for that other district that's just down the street from where they live. And there's nothing stopping them from doing that. They'll have to move by 2022 into the district, or by 2024, excuse me, into the district if they want to seek a second term if they win that this year. That's often not too tough, or maybe some of them just have plans to run for Congress or some higher office or retire in 2 years anyways.
And in addition to wanting to avoid a primary, say, with a member of your own party, we're seeing some candidates who are moving into neighboring districts because it's politically advantageous to them. For example, State Senator James Skoufis, while he hasn't declared his intentions to do this, it's my impression and my prediction that he's going to opt not to run in the Senate district, the newly drawn Senate district that he lives in, because it is a Republican-leaning district, and will instead run for a neighboring district that does not have an incumbent in it and would likely be going for a Democrat this fall. We have a sort of a different situation with Republican incumbent Jim Todisco. Can you talk a little bit about what he's sort of eyeing in the Capital Region?
Well, so the Capital Region seats were redesigned as much as anywhere in the state. There's one district centered on Albany that is as solid Democratic as any upstate seats are for the most part. Neil Breslin, who said that he's the dean of the Senate, he's the last remaining member from the 1990s, and he's planning on seeking another term, and I don't think he would be the underdog against anybody. There's then another seat in Saratoga and one seat in the Rensselaer County area. Both of those two are lean Democratic, certainly on paper, but not by quite the same margins as the Albany seat, where I don't think a Republican victory would be described as a seismic upset. It would probably just be described as like, oh, they pulled off a minor upset there. Mm-hmm. So Todisco lives in the Schenectady area, which under the new lines place him in the same district as Breslin in the safe Democratic seat. But the Saratoga seat is also where incumbent Republican Daphne Jordan lives. And Tedesco, as of now, is planning on running in that seat, which, you know, he's represented parts of that district in the past, so it's not like he's running a completely new territory. But that would set up a primary against a fellow Republican rather than trying to flip a Democratic seat, even with longer odds. It seems like the Republican leadership, from what we've seen so far, is very much against this idea. Even though Tedesco's as well tenured as any Republican in Albany, they'd rather have him just go for it and run against Breslin and see what happens.
Thinking about the lines in terms of the way our state's population has changed over the last decade, do the state Senate maps mirror the congressional trend of less representatives upstate and more in the New York City area?
Yeah, and we have a second factor going on with the Senate maps. So state legislative maps based on court ruling, there's some flexibility about them not needing to be exactly the same size. Districts can be roughly about 10% bigger than other districts elsewhere in the state. Congress, they all need to be pretty much exactly the same total population. So Congress has been divided based on population in the past. But as I mentioned earlier, Republicans traditionally drew the state Senate maps. And what they would do is make districts extra big in New York City, you know, add a couple tens of thousands of people into those districts. So that way there could usually be one or two fewer districts in New York City, which were guaranteed to represent or guaranteed to elect Democrats. And then in parts of upstate, they would make the maps have a smaller population so they could squeeze more districts there and have more districts that were winnable by Republicans. The courts backed away from that a bit, and the districts are more equal in population. So that adds to the general population shift. And we've got two entirely new districts in New York City now.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're breaking down the recently created state Senate lines from a court-appointed special master. And our guest is Bill Mahoney, Capitol reporter for Politico New York. When we think about the way the Senate Republicans approached the lines, it was obviously done to hold on to power and, in cases like you just sort of talked about, dilute the power of Democratic voting blocs. And another way they would do that was by breaking up Democratic voting blocs. And we saw that with Schenectady, which was added to an extremely rural area. So the very Democratic-heavy area of Schenectady had Republican representation in the Senate. It was Jim Tedesco. The city of Rochester was divided up into multiple districts.
Rochester's probably the best example where the city of Rochester itself is roughly the size of a state Senate district, or close to it in past redistricting cycles. But the most recent one, they split it up into three seats, where they had two seats that were small parts of the city of Rochester, but then mostly filled with its suburbs that were very winnable by Republicans. And then one seat that had a sliver of Rochester that went through a huge length of rural countries to connect with some of the towns immediately next to Buffalo. That this seat made less sense than any other seat in the state, arguably. But the result of this is that even though there were enough Democrats living in the city of Rochester to guarantee at least one Democrat being elected, if not two, for most of the past several decades, these seats were regularly won by Republicans because they'd be running in districts where only a third of their voters were in the city of Rochester and the other two-thirds were in either rural towns or suburban towns where Republicans could be competitive.
Well, is that trend reversed by the special master?
Well, so in the case of Rochester, he drew two seats that were largely centered on Rochester, where it's largely split in the middle for the most part. And these two seats were both won by Democrats for the first time in many years in 2020 during one of the blue wave years. Mm-hmm. They were up for tough elections, especially if we have a red wave year, a Republican-friendly midterm election, as a lot of people expect. They won by small enough margins where it was very possible they could lose. But what the special master did was split up Rochester in a way that both of their seats are now much more safely Democratic, and they're probably much less of a concern for Democratic leadership.
And how about Ithaca, a liberal enclave that's had Republican representation for as long as I can remember?
Ithaca has been one of the most talked about places in New York State in all of the maps going back over the past year. The redistricting hearings held by the commission that wound up failing last summer, that was one of the most talked about things because Ithaca it's as blue a place as anywhere in New York State, more to the left than New York City in many ways if you look at its voting trends, but it's kind of in the middle of all these towns in the southern tier that are by no means Democratic friendly. So it has been in Senate districts where there's often been a strong Democrat coming from Ithaca, but that's only a sliver of the district's population, and the rest of it is so deep red that the Democrat doesn't stand a chance. There has been talk about linking it with the Syracuse area rather than some of the southern tier towns, combining it to more urban areas. But what the map wound up doing, and this had been proposed in a Democratic plan in a different way earlier in the year, is linking it to Binghamton. So there now is this district in the southern tier that is, on paper at least, very friendly to Democrats.
What about Long Island? This is an area where just a few years ago had complete Republican representation of all 9 seats. Democrats were able to eventually take over a majority of the seats. I think now they have 5. Republicans have 4. What do the new lines look like down there? And are there any chances of Republicans winning back their majority there?
There's definitely some benefits for both parties under the new lines. One of the big losers in this process is Senator Jim Garin, who flipped a very competitive seat after decades of Democrats trying to target this seat in northwestern Suffolk County.
Okay.
He became the first to pull it off, and it was by a relatively small margin. He won by a small margin 2 years ago. His district was redrawn in a way that makes it a bit more Republican-friendly, so that way the small margins might not be enough, and he probably needs to do better among Republicans and even Democrats than he had in the past to pull it off. And he's now in the same district as a incumbent Republican, Mario Matera. So the numbers aren't horrific for them there, but it turns what has been a challenging race for him in the past to a more challenging race. There is good news for Democrats in that part of the state as well. If you look in further east in Suffolk County, there's been talk for years of a new district to provide a majority or plurality for Hispanic voters in the district. And that was drawn. It does seem like former Democratic Senator Monica Martinez is going to mount a comeback campaign in that seat. So that one's been a bit competitive in the past, but this seems to make it a bit closer to a lock for Democrats.
So then what's the final math that you're looking for at the end of the day? Because right now, Senate Democrats control 43 out of 63 seats, which gives them a supermajority in the chamber. They need to have 32 to just have a bare majority. Do they need to be worried about their control of the chamber, even during a red wave year like we're expecting?
I don't think that's a big concern at the moment. I do think their supermajority is very much on the table, if not at risk. It's a bit difficult for me to say until we know who's running in some of these seats. Like you mentioned, the question of does James Skoufis wind up running in this new Poughkeepsie area seat, or does he run in his current seat? There's a bunch of questions like that that are still unanswered, and we'll have to see how things shake out over the next couple of weeks before trying to figure out which districts lean certain ways. But there's some parts of the state that are definitely bad for them, especially if the numbers move more towards the Republican column, as we might expect. But a lot of that's offset by some of these gains in places like Ithaca or Islip in Suffolk County or the 2 new New York City seats that we were talking about.
Well, we've been speaking with Bill Mahoney. He is a Capitol reporter for Politico New York. Bill, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.